Hi there. This is a CPD in 140 podcast on EduTalk Radio, and I'm Ian Guest. I'm currently engaged in doctoral research looking at teacher professional learning supported through Twitter. If you're interested and would like to know more, head over to my research blog, cpdin140.wordpress.com. One of the methods I'm using is semi-structured interviews, and if participants give the permission, I'll post our resulting chat here on EduTalk. If you're interested in being involved, I'd be delighted to hear from you. Just drop me a tweet or DM, and I'm at Ian in Sheffield, all one word, on Twitter. Kevin Hodgson, a teacher in the United States, and who is also known as at DogTracks on Twitter, was kind enough to be the first person to agree to appearing here. So let's get straight into this and listen to what Kevin had to say about his experiences learning professionally on Twitter. I wonder if you could confirm, first of all, that you received the information from me prior to this and that you were comfortable with any with all of it, and if there were any questions that you had outstanding.
Yeah, I received the information. I'm comfortable with it all. And no, I don't have any questions at this point.
Fantastic. In which case, we'll make a start then. I'll be exploring a couple of themes today, as you're perhaps aware from the research that I mentioned before. I'm looking into teacher professional learning and particularly that through Twitter. So we'll cover those sort of broad areas and try to focus in on one or two specific points. But I wonder if you'd mind just starting by giving a sense of what your background is in education, what you're currently doing, and what you're involved in.
Sure. So I came into teaching after 10 years as a journalist, a newspaper journalist, and I've been teaching this is my 15th year, teaching sixth grade, which are 11 and 12-year-olds, in a small suburban community in Western Massachusetts, USA. I'm part of the Western Massachusetts Writing Project, which is part of the National Writing Project, which is an organization across the United States, a couple of satellite places, I think, beyond U.S., but mostly U.S., built on the notions of teachers teaching teachers, and also the idea of writing being at the heart of how we learn. So I've been really focused on that as a professional development and also a way to connect with a lot of teachers around interests that I have in the idea of writing and the idea of, expanding the notion of writing too, which is a lot what I've been exploring in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, I think. So, I guess that's, the basics of it. I teach 4 classes of writing, reading, and technology kind of merged all together for my 11 and 12-year-old students.
You're bringing an awful lot together there, actually. A lot of experiences being brought into it. And the National Writing Project is something that I'm certainly aware of. They do seem to be a very broadly connected group of people in many different ways.
Yes, yeah.
So with that in mind, then, I guess we'll move on to Twitter. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got to using Twitter, if you can remember that far back?
I actually can. I was this connects back to the National Writing Project. I was at a retreat for the National Writing Project. Actually, it was kind of here, a town over from where I live. And there was a teacher there that I knew, Bud Hunt, who goes by Bud the Teacher on Twitter. And he was talking to us all at dinner about this site called Twitter and trying to explain what it was. And if you remember the first time you confronted it, it's a little confusing. But I was intrigued by this idea of the possibility of finding ways to connect with other teachers. So after listening to Bud and thinking about it for a while, I jumped in at that point and started to go through those phases that I think people, they still go through, but that at least we went through at the beginning, which is watching for a long time, trying to figure out how to engage in the kind of stream of information, and then also slowly realizing that there were clusters and groups and communities of teachers that were connecting, and of course quickly realizing the power of the hashtag as a way to to filter out and, well, not filter out, maybe filter in, to connect in with people who are sharing along certain themes. So, I mean, all that is a kind of a journey that I think that a lot of us kind of go on and trying to figure out the potential of Twitter. And for me, it just became a really kind of main connecting hub, I think, for connecting in with other teachers.
So the aspect of connecting is quite important. What do you think that provides for you? I mean, why is that such a valuable thing in your case?
Well, I think like a lot of teachers, I admire the teachers and work well with the teachers in my school and on my team, but it's a limited community. And I think the idea of, well, not just Twitter, but, you know, a lot of different social media aspects allow you to kind of move beyond those kind of voices in your own school or in your own classroom and feel like you're part of the bigger picture of education and kind of connected into the bigger view of what's going on. And so for me, like, that was a real eye-opening experience, I think, to think about the ways you could step outside your classroom, your school district and find other teachers who are doing amazing things and learn from them, and then realize that maybe also the reverse happens too, that you could share some of what you're doing. And, you know, for me as a my own identity as a writer, it also allowed me to kind of reflect on what I was doing in a way of considering different audiences. So that's been helpful as well.
And how has your experience of a writer been brought into the conversations that you're having? How has it helped you, I suppose, in a sense, make those connections?
Well, I think there's a couple of different ways. One is it's allowed me to read a lot more other people's writings. And then, you know, the more expanded our notions are of what's out there, the more it informs us as writers. So I think, you know, that piece of it is expanding out. I think it's allowed me to play with the form of writing. I'm just thinking that, you know, myself, like, outside of a teacher writer, just being a writer, the way that, you know, short fiction and other things kind of force you to reconsider kind of what writing is. And so I think Twitter has been one of those places where I've been able to experiment a little bit and with other people. And I think that's been helpful. You know, I think in both of those cases, the worry and concern is always, you know, the echo chamber effect of we're just connecting with the same people whose ideas resonate with us and don't kind of get those outside voices. And I think that's always a danger of the social media. And I think it's incumbent on all of us to try to expand that as much as possible and invite a lot of voices into the mix as much as possible. And so we're not in this kind of narrow vision of how we see teaching or how we see writing or how we see, you know, the social world around us. But it's I think, a difficult one that many of us try to navigate.
I think that gives a really good sense of a broad brush overview of your approach and your attitude towards it. Can we pick up on some of the more pragmatic things? What are some of the actual activities that you would do on Twitter, or how do you actually access it? What's the environment you're in when you're accessing Twitter?
Well, for me, mostly it's, so I guess the environment is mostly me here at home. You know, we do have a classroom Twitter account for my sixth graders, but we don't use it all that often. And part of it is just navigating the social media aspect of it and other elements that make it a little more complicated. So mostly it's me as an individual. You know, I think in some of the projects that I've tried to help facilitate or be part of, I'm just thinking of like the CL MOOC, a Making Learning Connected MOOC, and some of the work with DigiRimo in the past. You know, a lot of those is using Twitter to connect and invite, to try to engage people in projects that may not unfold on Twitter itself, but kind of become satellites of kind of what's going on there. So a hashtag might be a meeting place, but then we're inviting people to participate, to collaborate, to create kind of in other spaces, including their own spaces, and then hopefully filter back and fold back into the Twitter account or Twitter hashtag so that there's an audience there. And I think that audience becomes the community in a lot of ways.
You mentioned CL MOOC and DigiRimo there. They're sort of arranged around a hashtag, am I right in saying?
Yes, on Twitter, but also, you know, they're in other spaces too. So it's, I think, you know, the Twitter is just part of the whole ecosystem, or, you know, that's the vision of it, you know, that people come into those connected learning projects where they're comfortable, where their entry point is, and it doesn't have to be Twitter. So it gets very chaotic too, because, you know, some people are here, some people are there, and that's just one of the things that you kind of live with those kind of projects that kind of makes it also kind of very interesting, is that you don't always know where things are happening or what's going on. You know, Rhizo is another one, right? So there's a whole bunch that kind of, I think, intersect and overlap, and you know, there runs that danger of the echo chamber, right, where it's the same people moving from hashtag to hashtag, and you're having maybe slightly different conversations, but, you know, with the same people. So the idea is to try to broaden that as much as possible, I think, and learn from a lot of different people.
And a word you used there was chaotic. How do you manage that? What sort of strategies do you bring to enable you to navigate those spaces and make sense of it?
Well, I use TweetDeck because you can sort by hashtag. I mean, that's a very valuable tool, I think. And I think when I'm not on that and I'm just kind of watching the stream, I just can't keep track of things. But I think being able to sort by hashtags, I mean, there again goes to the power of that idea of curating, right? Of finding a way to kind of make sense of that, what seems from the outside to be just a stream of words that don't have much anchor. And I think being able to curate it gives it a semblance of entry points. So I think one of the things that, you know, we talked about when people first look at Twitter and they say, what is this thing? And, you know, how does anybody engage? I think that's because they're watching the full stream happen. And that's really hard to make sense of. I think finding tools to kind of do that is really important.
What sorts of tools beyond Twitter might you use? And is there anything else within Twitter that can help with that? So the hashtag itself can act as a means to help you sort these spaces out. Are there any features of Twitter that help? And you mentioned TweetDeck as an external tool. Are there any other external tools too?
Well, I think the one that I would use most for like tweet chats, which can also become very chaotic, is I think it's called tweet chat. I don't know. It kind of sorts you into a room with the hashtag. I think that's whenever we do one of those chats, I try to give people advice that, you know, use a tool like that to kind of just narrow your focus on the hashtag so you know what's going on. And when you're replying, it automatically tags in the hashtag. And I think that kind of idea of staying connected within that discussion is really important. I think, you know, I've tried to use Twitter lists too, you know, where you can sort people under kind of different categories or banners or names. But then I find I don't use them all that often. So... it's interesting because like for the writing project, I keep a list. Every time I bump into somebody who's a writing project person, I pop it on that list. And I still do it even though I don't use it, because I feel like it's a way for me to feel like I'm part of the bigger community. But it's interesting that, you know, it's there and it's valuable, but it doesn't have value for me necessarily for whatever reason. I'm not sure why.
So is the natural follow on from that, that actually the lists might be useful to others, even if they're of no use to you? Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so, because I think, you know, I try to share that list out every now and then, particularly like when we're going to have, like next week, we have our big National Writing Project annual conference. So we have it once a year. And so I'll often try to share it out in case anybody's interested. And then I'll really keep an eye on the NWP hashtag and add people that aren't on my list as a way to kind of keep that growing like a garden, right? And so, yeah, so I think it is maybe less valuable for me particular, but hopefully valuable to somebody else.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah, I can see. How does Twitter fit in, if that's the right word, with normal life, just for want of a better expression? Does it run alongside it? Is it additional to it? Is it integrated? How would you describe that?
I would say for the most part, it's pretty integrated into kind of the way I connect, in education, but beyond education too. Although, you know, a lot of my friends who are not teachers are not on there. So that's an interesting question. I think that, I guess it's more, I see it more as my identity as an educator than my identity as somebody beyond education. Although sometimes those do spill over. So I'm just thinking of our election right now, right? But even there, I feel like it's still connecting me as my identity as a teacher. It's not really integrated fully into my life outside my teaching identity, I guess.
That's interesting. Perhaps there are other tools that you use that help with the other side of your life that's non-educational. Would that be true?
Yeah, I think for a lot of it, it's text messaging with friends and an email. So more one-on-one, I think, small cluster communication as opposed to open space sharing out loud that kind of Twitter allows you to do.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that information on Twitter. I wonder if you can just move now to talk a little bit about professional learning. I guess a good place to start would be, do you use the term professional learning or professional development? And is there a distinction for you?
Let me think about that. Well, I think the way I see those two terms is when I hear professional development, I think of like my school district hosting professional development that I go to, or I'm going to a conference that has a series of workshops. Whereas personal learning seems to be I'm driven by my own interests and my own time. I'm following the kind of thread of curiosity, and sometimes those intersect with that idea of professional development within my field, and sometimes they don't. So I guess I do see them as two separate entities that sometimes overlap with each other and sometimes don't.
The overlap's quite an interesting theme to explore, but I think you used the word I'm driven to do something there, if I heard correctly. To what extent or what are the drivers of your professional learning? Where does the impetus come from?
Well, the main one is that I'm really interested in my students and their lives as writers, and particularly in this time of changing notions of what writing is and how to tap into the things that they're curious about and engage them in both where traditional writing practices need to come into play. So I'm thinking about audience and editing and proofreading and writing for a certain genre, and also the things that have meaning for them. So I think that kind of juggling act of trying to teach them the skills they need as young writers, but also engage them in meaningful writing experiences, it often has me searching out, ideas and experiences that other teachers have kind of used that have been successful, and then also trying to share the things that I've done too, and hopefully connect with other teachers who are thinking the same thing. So I think mostly it's that idea of how can I help my students become better writers in this kind of world of changing writing.
I'm thinking about the overlap that you described earlier on between what you've just described, I interpret as sort of internally motivated. Is there a sense in which the professional development that you mentioned was mandated or driven by the external agencies like the school or the district? Do they help to provide the what you just described as the helping the students experience through their the writing development? Or are they sometimes at odds with what you're hoping to achieve from your internal?
Yeah, I was just, Yeah, I was just going to say, not often, or not often enough does it connect there. I think there is a sense or the reality that a lot of that is out of step, I think, with notions of literacy in the kind of day and age that we're in, which is frustrating a lot of times. And so therefore, one way to deal with that frustration is to find other avenues to get the kind of more informal professional development maybe that we need from other sources, from other teachers, not from necessarily the PD providers. So I think that's there. I think also too, when I was thinking again of that, going back to the overlap term, is I'm curious too as a writer, like, you know, how is my writing being reshaped by different media and different platforms and different thinking about it? So, you know, I'm of the notion that I should be trying everything before I bring it in my students, and also be doing it with them as well, which I do, to talk about what works, what doesn't work, the workarounds that I had to find out to make it work, how it often falls short of my vision for what I wanted to do, you know, all those kind of things. I think that, you know, the way we understand that is by doing it ourselves too. So, you know, that's also kind of pushes me forward too. So I'm curious as a writer, but also curious as a teacher writer.
Yeah, yeah. Curiosity. Foundation.
Absolutely.
Which good learning is built, one might say.
Absolutely, yeah.
This might be a tricky one, but could you tell me about what, in your opinion, was the most powerful or meaningful or impactful professional learning, professional development opportunity that you've ever experienced? What do you think had the biggest impact on you?
Well, I think they're both related to the writing project in a lot of ways. So, first of all, for me, like my first year of teaching, I was able to take part in what's called the Summer Institute at our writing project site, because my wife was part of it before I was, so I kind of followed her in. And that was 4 weeks of pretty intensive writing, learning about the teaching of writing, learning about how to get professional development. So that was a pretty intensive professional development opportunity as a young teacher that really kind of shaped my thinking about things. And then from there, it's kind of a longer story, but from there, I got interested in the technology aspects of things, even though it was pretty early on, I think, in the whole world of technology and education. And summer later, I went to a retreat in California of writing project teachers called Technology Matters. And that was a week-long retreat where it really opened my eyes, I think, to the way that digital literacies could be viewed through the lens of teaching. And a lot of those people that were in that institute, I'm still very much connected with. This is like 14 years later. And I think, you know, that a lot of what happened in that kind of week really kind of shaped how I kind of saw my view as a teacher, and also back to that idea of paying attention to what my students were doing outside of school, and could I connect it back into school. And so those two kind of experiences, and they're both connected by the kind of my identity as a writing project teacher, I think, are really key for me in a lot of ways.
I guess they're formal programs in a sense, in that there was some element of structure. There were people coming from different places. But it sounds like, if I interpreted correctly, they led to less formal connections as well. You said you're still in touch with them.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I think that it laid the groundwork for things that would happen beyond that last day of the Institute, right? And I think that goes to the ethos of the writing project itself, which is, you know, really teacher-driven, all about sharing best practices out with other teachers, learning from each other. I think that ethos naturally kind of led to connections beyond the end point of any particular institute. So, like, next week I'll go to Atlanta for a writing project meeting. I'll probably see a lot of people from that institute from 14 years ago. You know, some are retired now, but we'll kind of connect back in, and it'll be really interesting, and we'll kind of remember that experience and as a connector point. You know, I think it points to, so we were talking about Twitter too, like, you know, one of the drawbacks of Twitter is that you don't have that necessarily, you know, in-person experience where you kind of bond in a really certain way, you know, beyond the formal structural kind of moments. It's the eating over lunch and talking about what's going on and those kind of things. So although some of that can happen on Twitter, it doesn't happen in the same way. I think that kind of human interaction point plays a critical role.
Yeah, there's no question at all. Now, I wonder if you would you say that people come to the writing project with a certain mindset? They are connectors and sharers, or do you think the writing project and the retreats actually bring that out in them and develop them? I suppose I'm looking for a causal direction, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know if there is one. I think it's probably both. And or at least, you know, I can only speak from my experience, really. But I think that, you know, the foundation there can make that happen. But you also have to be the one to say, I'm going to make that happen. So so I think that it could go either way. I'm sure it invites a certain kind of person, too. So, yeah, I'm not really quite sure.
Yeah, that's fine. So we've covered, we sort of got back to the connections there, which are perhaps to some extent conducted through social media, following on from the face-to-face meetings. What factors do you draw upon in deciding to follow someone or connect with them? What are the things that you're looking for in the connections that you make?
I think that I'm looking for other curious people, who are willing to take kind of chances on being part of something that's a little bit unknown at the moment, but might be interesting to see where it goes. But I'm also hoping that, I'll invite some people into different projects that we're part of that might be a little tentative at first. And so finding ways to help them take that first step is always, I think, an interesting part of being, I don't know what the right word is, but, you know, being somebody who wants to broaden the canvas, I think, as wide as possible, you know, as much as I can. And I think having the notion of inviting people and supporting people, even though I don't know them, and because I think that when they participate, it makes what I'm doing a lot more interesting. And so so it's a personal motivation, as well as, you know, trying to think of teaching as a bigger picture, too, of hopefully some of that spills back into classrooms as well. So, you know, you hope that that happens. Sometimes it takes years, you know, really. So, you know, we talk a lot in some of those different spaces, like, you know, Rhizome and CL MOOC, about how many people are not participating, but kind of watching, and how to value their participation on that level, too. And it's tricky because you don't see them, but you want them to know that they're welcomed as well, that everyone's on their own path. And sometimes it takes a long time, and sometimes, you know, you don't reach the end, and sometimes you realize that this is the perfect invitation point, and now I'm kind of into the mix.
Indeed. And why would someone, and I'm not questioning your integrity here, but what do you get from sharing with or supporting, was one of the words you used, people, when there's no sense in which you can see the outcome of that? With your students, for example, you can see the progress that they're making, and that gives you that feedback, and you know that you're doing something right. So how do you get that with the invisible people, if at all? Maybe you don't. Maybe it's not necessary.
I think it's built on hope, right? Hope that, you know, it's a little egotistical too, right? I mean, hope that something that you're doing will positively impact somebody else. And you're right, there's no way to know. And it's part of that. It can be really frustrating for people on that end, but it's not, I don't feel that way. I think that there's a sense that, you know, that some of us are kind of trying to help others kind of see a path forward. I don't know. There's no way to express it without kind of sounding so egotistical, like you're the person making the change in the world. But, you know, the hope is that you help other people make small changes, just like I'm trying to learn from them to make my own small changes. I mean, I think the same thing with our students. I mean, you know, I'm hopeful that the things we're doing here as their 11-year-old, right, will help them when they're 25. But for the most part, I don't know that unless they come back and talk to me. But there's a hope and a faith that the things we do as teachers at whatever age our students are, that down the line, that helps one little bit. You know, lays the groundwork for other things and connects with what happened before they came to me in sixth grade, all those teachers, great teachers they had before me, you know, that we kind of were all building together. But we don't really always know.
No. And there's nothing wrong in the end of the day, I would argue, with altruism. As you said, faith and hope and what potential could come from that. You mentioned CL MOOC and a couple of other things, the writing project. Are there any other teacher-led or from the ground up learning experiences in which you've been involved?
I think most of them have been affiliated one way or the other with the writing project identity. I'm just trying to think if there's any kind of outside that, and not necessarily that I can think of off the top of my head.
I was thinking,
you know, which I was going to say, which goes back to the concerns about the echo chamber too, right? That if that's my whole ecosystem, am I hearing the voices kind of outside that? So I think about that a lot.
Yeah, sure, but I think you have in the States an Ed Camp movement.
Mm-hmm.
Have you come across them? Is that?
Well, I've come across them, through various, Twitter connections, I guess. But we haven't had any in our kind of part of the state. And we've talked about it actually through our writing project again, but haven't kind of moved forward on it necessarily.
Okay, no, that's fine. We're getting close to the end of the hour, so I'll start to draw things to a close and see how you answer this. If this is too difficult, fine. What would you do if Twitter went away, if anything? Would you be at all bothered?
Oh, yeah, I'd be bothered. and definitely have thought about it, because you can see the struggles that they're having, right? And not only that, what would happen if they're bought out by a larger organization that had other plans in mind for it, right? And I think that's still very much a possibility. It wouldn't be the end of the world, but it would definitely be a gap in the way that I connect with the teachers and the way that I write and the way I use it as a kind of a place to learn from others and kind of share out. So yeah, it would definitely be, it would be one of those moments that I guess wouldn't be a surprise necessarily, because we know that, things that are free can go away in an instant. And I don't know what would happen, I guess, if that happened. So, but I think it's a possibility for sure. I think that anybody who thinks otherwise is not following the state of Twitter these days.
Absolutely. And the word you used was it's leave a gap. Do you think that would need filling at all? And if it did, where would you look? Where might you consider?
I don't know. I definitely would be looking for something that would fill that gap. I use Google+. Sometimes, mostly for communities, but again, Google has made it clear that that's not in their big plans anymore. So I wouldn't be surprised if that disappeared as well. I don't use Facebook because of privacy issues and concerns over the way that it's all set up. So I don't see myself jumping into that. So I don't know what I would do.
It's a bridge to cross when we come to it.
Yeah.
I've covered all of the areas that I want to, and actually some of the questions that I had in the list you managed to cover in the fullness of time, which I'm really grateful. But is there anything that you think is pertinent that I've not given you the opportunity to talk about? Are there any areas that you think are worthy of bringing to my attention that I haven't allowed you to speak on?
I can't think of any. No, not off the top of my head anyway.
No, that's fine. Absolutely fine. Well, we're just about coming up to the hour, and I promise I won't go any longer than that because you've been very kind enough to give up some time this morning. So what I'll do during the course of the next week or so is I'll transcribe our talk today and I'll send you a copy of that transcript. And if there's anything that you're concerned about, by all means, let me know.
Okay.
And I think you mentioned that you were happy enough for this to be podcast subsequently. I'm not asking you to say definitely yes at the moment, but if you, again, when you see this transcript, if you change your mind about that, that's fine too.
Okay.
Well, that was the first interview, so I'd just like to close it by saying a big thank you to Kevin for being so generous with his time, and also thank him for his observations. I'd also like to repeat my invitation to any listeners who might like to be involved in the project. Just catch me on Twitter or head across to the CPD in 140 blog and leave me a message. Thanks and bye for now.